College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Later in the show, we'll be joined by Pitt head coach Jeff Capel as part of our ACC preseason preview. Want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on Apple Podcasts. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also want to remind you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also send me your ACC-related questions on Twitter. I'll get to them later in this podcast. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. And a reminder to find and listen to the College Hoops Today podcast on Stitcher. You can find us there right now. And I want to let you know that today's episode of the College Hoops Today podcast is being sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of the money Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your dog to make you breakfast in bed? As nice as that sounds, that's probably never going to happen. But at least there's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. Now that we've got you all set for all your Geico news, before we get into the ACC, let's look into the state of college hoops as we do each and every week right here. Now, I reported last week that the Men's and Women's Basketball Oversight Committee has proposed a start date of November 25th to the Division I Council for the 2021 college basketball season. Now, what does that mean? On the 16th of September, which is next week, next Wednesday, the Division I Council is going to vote whether or not November 25th is signed off on as the start date for the NCAA college basketball season. So that's the first hurdle. Now, in addition to that, here's some additional information that I can add to that. While we've had, obviously, extenuating circumstances due to COVID-19, the NCAA is still planning to play the NCAA tournament in March and early April and not move it to later dates on the calendar. We've heard a lot of speculating on speculation that some people wanted to have the tournament in May, some people want to have the tournament in June. As of now, and of course things can change, the NCAA is still planning to play the NCAA tournament in March and early April. And another big thing to keep in mind of, while there has been significant chatter regarding conference-only schedules in college hoops, many of the key decision-makers involved are still adamant about playing non-conference games in college basketball, and the biggest reason why is because there needs to be appropriate criteria to seed the NCAA tournament. Those non-conference games are really a true barometer to just how good some of these leagues are going to be and how they're going to be perceived in the eyes of the selection committee. I will continue to keep you abreast of everything that's going on as to the start of next season each and every week right here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Now let's get to the ACC. Last season, the ACC was a top-heavy league. Only 4 to 5 teams were expected to play in the NCAA tournament. To me, this season, depth will be back in a major way. Virginia brings back a returning nucleus of Kihei Clark, of Jay Huff, of Casey Marcel, of Thomas Waldetensai. They add Sam Hauser to the mix, the transfer from Marquette, and to me that makes Virginia a bona fide Final Four contender and the favorite in the ACC. North Carolina loses Cole Anthony, still should be vastly improved, in my opinion, from last season. A loaded freshman class. I don't know if North Carolina is going to be perceived as one of the best teams in the country, but I think North Carolina will be an NCAA tournament team. Another team to me that's on the rise is Miami. When Jim Larrañaga, and he's done it twice, has had great teams in Coral Gables, it's been because of great experience. Miami has 4 fifth-year seniors on its roster right now, in its rotation, and that doesn't count Chris Likes, who will be a senior point guard. I see Miami as a team that will challenge for a spot in the ACC's top third next season. I also see big things coming for Georgia Tech. Jose Alvarado and Michael DeVoe return for Josh Pastner. And ask yourself this question. If a team had two guards back who averaged better than 14 points a game last season, how would it be perceived? Like an NCAA tournament team. Georgia Tech, to me, is in position to be in position to make the NCAA tournament. What about other teams in the ACC? What about Pitt? The Panthers look much better on paper, but the question is, how much better? We'll find out when we talk to Jeff Capel, the head coach of the Pitt Panthers, right here on the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein, coming up next. Before we talk to Pitt's Jeff Capel, I want to tell you about our sponsor, DraftKings. Now is the time to celebrate. Football is finally back, and DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, has millions of reasons why you should be excited. To kick off the football season, DraftKings is giving new users a free shot at a $1 million top prize with a total of $3 million up for grabs. This Thursday's football contest is on the horizon. Getting in on Thursday night's single game showdown is easy. All you have to do is download DraftKings using promo code COLLEGE. Draft six players from the season opener, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. So head to the app now to start making it rain. Plus, new users who sign up today on DraftKings using code COLLEGE will receive a free shot at the $1 million top prize with your first deposit. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game like having a shot at a $1 million payday. Here is what you have to do. Download the DraftKings app now and use code COLLEGE. For a limited time, new users can get a free shot at the $1 million top prize and $3 million in total prizes. Don't miss this extra special week one bonus. Enter code COLLEGE to get a free shot at the $1 million top prize with your first deposit. That's code COLLEGE only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Jeff Capel is now a seasoned veteran at the University of Pittsburgh, or at least getting there. Two seasons under his belt in the Steel City, and he now joins the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. And Jeff, how would you describe this offseason?
Well, it's been the hottest one since I've been involved in basketball. Obviously, we have a national pandemic, a national crisis going on with that, and that's changed everything. From how you train, you know, when you do it, how you do it, not having kids on campus. It changed how you prepare. We still aren't for certain, you know, when our season's going to start, how it's going to be. And so it's been the most uncertain offseason that I've ever experienced.
Now, Jeff, you and every other, obviously, coach in college basketball wants to get your players on the floor, wants to start working as a team. But because of what these players have had to endure for the last 6 months, are you equally as concerned about their well-being mentally off the court as much as what happens in between the lines?
Yeah, I am. I'm more so concerned about that, you know, their mental health with everything that's going on, which is one of the reasons why I think we should have more access to them on the court. For most of the student athletes around the country, they went for a really long period of time where they were away from campus. They were away from normal. With the guys that were already in college, this was probably the longest that they have been at home for an extended period of time since they were in high school.
Right.
And so that's very difficult. And then for a lot of kids, their outlet is athletics, are their teams, you know, is having the ability to get into the gym, you know, to work, to get into the weight room and work. That's kind of their escape. And they didn't have that. And if you look around the country, in most states, there was a period of time where they had nowhere to go. You know, they couldn't go to a playground. They took the baskets off. Obviously you couldn't get into gyms. And so it's, yes, I'm definitely worried about the mental health with all of that. They're away from their teammates. They're away from their coaches. When they get back, you know, in a lot of places you had to quarantine, you know, for a week, 2 weeks, whatever it is. You're doing workouts now, like you're in masks. I mean, so it's just, it is very different. So I am worried about the mental health, again, which is one of the reasons I do feel like we being the coaches, should be able to have more access with these guys to help them navigate through this.
Now, you mentioned, obviously, you know, the crisis that's going on in our country with coronavirus. There's also been other crises that have emerged due to racial injustice. For you as a black man, what has it been like to personally witness what's happened in our country in that specific area?
Yeah, you know, racism has been a crisis, really, throughout the history of this country. I think right now there's more light on it. I think people are seeing it. I don't think it's a coincidence that people are able to see it more. You know, I'm a big believer, and this is something my dad taught me when I was growing up. You know, everything happens for a reason. And, you know, my really good friend, Tommy Amaker, who's the head coach at Harvard, he said this so eloquently, and I think it's so true. It's not a coincidence that this is happening in 2020. You know, when you think about 2020 and you think about vision, it's clear vision. And I think the pandemic has been able to bring clear vision where you can see this national crisis, this different type of pandemic, which is racism that's existed in our country since our country's existence. Unfortunately for me, this is not something new. This is something that I have had to navigate throughout my 45 years of life. I'd probably say the last 35, because up until I was about 10, I didn't really understand what was going on. And my parents did an amazing job of shielding me from that. But it's something that I've – and so since I've been a head coach, whether it was at VCU at Oklahoma, this is something that I talk to my guys about constantly. Mm-hmm. And tried to help them navigate some of the things that could happen and some of the things that most likely are going to happen, some of the stereotypes, you know, all those different things. And so, but for these young guys, and this is where I say the mental health, look, I'm 45, and this whole thing has been difficult to me. If you look at it and all the things that we're going through, you have this national pandemic with coronavirus, you have all the stuff with racial injustice, and then you have probably the most divisive political climate, certainly in my 45 years on this earth, that I've ever been a part of. And so where's the escape? You know, there's not really an escape. And so what I've tried to do is to be a listening ear. I want my guys to be able to vent to me in our space, in our safe place, because I don't want them to hold on to this anger. And this anger is released in a way that can be incredibly harmful for them. So we want to do that. You know, we want to give them a comfortable space for them to talk. They are confused. They're angry. They're frustrated. And they're, to be quite frank, they're afraid. And it's up to our university community to help these guys navigate these tumultuous times.
Well, you mentioned that, you know, racism wasn't something you had to deal with for your first 10 years of life. I'm curious, when was the first time that you can recall that you personally dealt with racism?
Yeah, you know, it was around 10 years old. I don't remember. I think it was around 10 years old. We were living in Southern Pines, Pinehurst area. My father was a high school coach at Pinecrest High School. And, you know, my neighborhood, it was a good neighborhood, but it was a lot of kids, and so we would play. I had a big, pretty big yard. We had a basketball court. We had a field over, and so we, whatever sport, baseball, football, certainly basketball. And then times when we played football, we'd play out in the street. We'd play tag, two-hand tag out in the street. And so one day we were out playing, and I remember, I'll never forget it, my mom came in, my mom came outside, I should say, kind of panicked. Mm-hmm. And like, hey, you guys need to get inside. You need to come inside. You need to go home. Everyone needs to go home right now. And it was all black kids, young black kids. And I didn't know. And so, I went inside. A couple of my friends came inside with me. Everyone else went home. And my mom was saying, she told me, like, look, the Klan is getting ready to march. They're getting ready to come through here. And I remember, I didn't really at the time, I'd heard of the Klan, but I didn't really know what it was. But I just remember this fear that I had, and it was probably because of the fear I saw in my mom for us being outside. And so that was the first time I remember it. And then from that point on, you know, my parents started telling me more. My background in the state is really interesting. My grandfather, my dad's dad, helped integrate the state. He was in politics. He was a businessman. But he had a big part, especially in his little part of eastern North Carolina, had a big hand in helping with integration. So I've heard stories, man. My dad saw stuff happen to his father that I've seen on movies. And so hearing those stories as I got older is something that's always stuck with me.
You know, if you don't feel comfortable sharing, you don't have to, but I'm curious, what did your father's father endure?
Dogs, sicked on them, water hoses, all of those things. You know, my grandfather helped, sit-ins, marches. There's a famous story. He and one of his best friends was a white guy, another businessman there named Mr. Voigt. They helped integrate the Sunrise Theater, which was a big thing. They helped integrate some golf courses there. But those are the things that my dad, my grandfather being spit on, my dad's told me all about that. And it was amazing because if you met my grandfather, you would never know. He was the most friendly guy. He never met a stranger. He had this unbelievable ability, and it's a gift, where, John, if he met you, one time, it could be 5 years ago, and you guys had, and you would have a conversation with him because he would bring it up. If he saw you 2-3 years later, he'd remember everything about the conversation. He'd remember your family, your kids' names. I mean, just everything. And so he never met a stranger. And as I got older, and I would talk to him about these things. I was a history major in college, and I was a minor in African and African American studies. And so I would talk to him about a lot of these different things. And I was fascinated with how he didn't have like hate in his heart. He didn't have hatred. I never heard him say anything negative about anyone. He just talked about, you have to stay positive. You have to keep pushing. This is a guy that worked for this cookware company, and our last name is Capel, but the way it's spelled, a lot of people would pronounce it Capel. And he would be the top seller. And so they'd have like the regional, the national conventions to honor like the top people, that sold. And he would never go because he didn't want them to know that he was black. Everyone thought he was French because of Capel. And I think 10 or 15 years later, he bought the company. And so like it's this amazing journey that he had. And it's a sense of pride for all of us. My dad's kids, the grandkids, the nephew, I mean, everything with the things that my grandfather, not only that he endured, but the impact that he had. And so we've had this thing in my family since I was born. And my dad has always preached it to us, my brother and I. And this is a direct reflection of my grandfather. It was always help others. When I was growing up and my dad was a high school coach, he was really good high school coach. Then he became a college coach, and he became a head coach at a historically black university. And then he made the jump to, Division One. And I would see him do clinics. I would see him do these things. And, sometimes people would come up for autographs. And that's what he would write on it, help others. And I remember when I was younger asking him about it, and he told me about the things that my grandfather taught him. And that's what he taught us. And so it's something that's really, really important to our family.
Well, Jeff, what you've shared and that you've went through personally and went through at 10 years old and what your family has gone through are things that nobody should ever have to go through or even think about during their life. So my question is this. It's one thing for us to post videos or post statements on social media when these crimes are topical. But from your perspective, what do we have to do as a country and a society just to be better in this area moving forward so we're not addressing them only when they're a topic?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And I think one of the biggest things that needs to happen is that there needs to be empathy. Mm-hmm. I think empathy for each person. When I look at this, when you look at how this country was founded and the principles that this country was founded on, it's really interesting. So my kids are in love with the play Hamilton. And sure. Since it came on Disney Plus, my daughters, they're 13 and 11, and my son, he'll be 8 in a couple of weeks. But my daughters especially, like, they watch this thing every day. It's become annoying, to be honest. They run around the house singing it and acting it out and things like that. But when you really watch it and you think about, you know, what they did, like writing the Constitution and all of these things were written really without black people in mind. Because in this country, those things have certainly not been honored. And so I think, number one, understanding that, being able to admit that, I think that's the first part. Then having empathy. You know, it's not going to change overnight. I know that. I mean, I think any black person knows that. But, you know, if you have empathy, if you want it to change, if you want to be better, it all goes back to help others. You know, I've one of the reasons I've always gravitated to team. Team has always been such a huge part of my life. Because to me, the really successful teams, and I've been a part of successful teams, whether it's as a player, you know, and as a coach, when teams are really, really good, everyone's working together. There's a collective responsibility. There's accountability. And everyone understands their role. They do their role. But most importantly, there's love. And to me, that's what our country needs to have. You know, I think that's why sports has played such an amazing role in race relations. Because when, you know, sports in the military, so to speak, because, you know, like when you're out there, you know, the military is different because you're fighting for life, you know, right. And so people can come together then. It's just unfortunate when you get back, sometimes as a black person, you're dealing with the same systemic things. But sports, man, sports has done so much to bring, I think, awareness, but also to expose people of different backgrounds to each other and to understand that we're more alike than we than maybe, you know, some people want to realize. And so to me, that's what needs to happen. You need to have empathy. You need to have love. You know, certainly there are some things, you know, with laws and things like that that need to be changed. But you can do all of that stuff, man. But if you don't have empathy and love, then nothing's going to change.
Pitt head coach Jeff Capel joined the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Well, powerful stuff there, Jeff. And let's transition right now as you enter your third year at the University of Pittsburgh. What's the biggest thing you know about your current post now that you didn't know when you were hired as head coach a couple of years ago?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I knew, obviously, I grew up in this league. You know, growing up in North Carolina, I've always been an ACC guy and had a chance to play in the ACC, and then certainly going back and for 7 years being an assistant coach at Duke, so being a part of it. But when you're a head coach and you're running your own thing, and you're not at Duke, you know, where you normally have the most talent, how hard this league is, you know, every day, night in and night out, especially when you're trying to build. You know, Pitt was new to the ACC, and so it doesn't have some of the natural recruiting ties that they certainly had when they were really good in the Big East. And so trying to navigate that, you know, one of the things that was fascinating to me when I took this job and we started recruiting was, you know, there were a lot of kids and their parents that had no idea that Pitt was in the ACC. Mm-hmm. And so understanding how to navigate that, I think for me, understanding the city more, understanding our university, all of those things, you know, I really like where we are right now. You know, John, I thought we had a chance last year. I thought we took a jump. I thought we had a chance to take a leap. But we weren't disciplined enough, to be consistently good. There were times we went through a stretch there last year where, you know, we won the tournament down in Florida. And so we beat, you know, Kansas State and Northwestern. Then we come back home and beat a really good Rutgers team in the ACC Big Ten Challenge.
Yeah.
You know, but we weren't able to maintain that consistency. And so hopefully that experience will really, really help us as we move forward whenever we're able to play this year.
You know, it's an interesting observation on your part, because I remember when the old Big East was the old Big East, I remember I was doing a story and I was talking to Jim Calhoun when he was in the heyday at UConn, and we were talking about how difficult it was for teams to build. And I always remember this. He said that if you're going to make a jump in a really good league, somebody else has to take a step back. Is that the biggest thing that you've noticed in the ACC? Because as you're trying to climb, every team in front of you is so good.
Yeah. And that's the part. I mean, I don't see anyone, certainly in the 2 years that I've been here, you know, taking a significant step back. Now, you have, you know, like this past year, Carolina was not Carolina that they normally are. But you know that that's going to be very, very short-lived. But that's the thing about this league. You know, I think everyone's trying to climb. Everyone's trying. And, you know, in this league, you have, you know, three of the biggest brands in college basketball, in Duke, North Carolina, and Syracuse. You know, and then you could maybe throw Louisville in there as far as college basketball. You have one of the biggest brands in all of sports in Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. And so you're competing against that. You look at what Virginia has been able to do. And so it's all of those things, these factors that you know, you're fighting up against. But again, I like where we are. You know, I really like the pieces that we've been able to put together. This will be the first season, you know, this year since I've been here, that we have a full allotment of scholarships. We have 13 scholarship guys. We were able to address some needs in this recruiting class. If you look at it, it's a lot of size. You know, we had a kid sitting out that, you know, we think will really help us with shooting. We really struggled to score last year, and especially shooting the basketball. We were historically bad. And so hopefully that's something that, you know, we can improve on. We've been pretty good defensively the first 2 years. The two areas that where we have to make a huge jump, and this will really help us, are, you know, the very first thing is defensive rebounding. We've been very poor at that. And then the second thing is scoring, is being able to shoot the basketball. And so hopefully with some of the things that we've done in recruiting and player development, we can be better on that side of, you know, with those two things, continue to be good defensively, and then be more disciplined, you know, around the board. I like the depth that we have. We have some experience back. And so we have a chance this year. You know, it's just it's been tough navigating it, man. This was a big summer for us as far as development, and certainly that was altered, not just for us, but for everyone.
Well, no, I mean, if you're a program that's building, you need those repetitions during the spring and summer months. You know, Jeff, you had mentioned about how a lot of people didn't know that Pitt was in the ACC because they were so familiar with the Panthers from their days in the Big East. Aside from having that built-in geographic footprint in recruiting, how is the Pitt job now, in your opinion, different in the ACC versus when Ben Howland and Jamie Dixon had it rolling in the Big East?
Well, you don't have the, you know, the historic rivalries. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the biggest things. I mean, you know, really for us right now, it's Syracuse, and you know, with how, you know, our program has performed against them, you know, since joining the ACC, I don't know if that's much of a rivalry right now. We need to make that a rivalry again. But when you look at it, you know, and you think of like the significant games, you know, it was always, you know, for Pitt, it was Pitt UConn, Pitt Georgetown, Pitt Syracuse, Pitt Villanova, Pitt St. John. You know, it was the traditional Big East, these northern schools. And so, you know, now once we start winning, then there will be rivalries. You know, there'll be, you know, that same type of intensity and things like that. That's where we have to get better. You know, we have to get better as a program. And again, hopefully this year we can make a huge leap.
Pitt head coach Jeff Capel joined the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Well, to make a huge leap, you obviously need to have really good players. I thought you had one of the least appreciated players in the country last year in Justin Champagne, who was just really, really good in his first year of college basketball. As he transitions right now to his second campaign in the sport, what do you anticipate?
Well, we need him to make a significant jump. You know, one of the things with Justin is that he had a very good freshman season. He led us in scoring and rebounding. And to be honest with you, John, that was really without a summer of development. Mm-hmm. As soon as he got here last summer for his freshman year, within the first week, he had a dislocated pinky that we had to have we had to have surgically repaired. And then he probably practiced about, I think, six times prior to our trip to Italy. Maybe five times prior to that. He played in the three games. And then once we got back and started school, he got hurt. And it was a really scary injury. We thought that he tore his ACL. Instead, it was a sprain. But he was out from the beginning of September up until maybe like the second week of practice. We scrimmaged Maryland last year, and he didn't really play much in that. And so this is a big summer for him, to really work on his ball skills, to get stronger, and to add, different elements to his game to become a more consistent shooter, being able to drive the basketball a little bit more, being able to be a little bit more versatile. Certainly ball handling, will help that. But he has a chance, to take a significant jump. It's interesting because, Xavier Johnson had a really outstanding freshman season. But he didn't have anyone in the program to really help him as far as a player to kind of help him navigate what happens for that next year. And he had a good year last year. It was solid, but it wasn't, like the X that we know that he can be. And I think he will be this year. And so I've really talked to Xavier about helping Justin, helping to navigate that. When you have a guys, man, that aren't used to the spotlight, like with certain guys that come in, like they've been in the spotlight their whole life, and so they understand the pressures. They've had to navigate through the pressure throughout their career, their high school career. It's very, very different. Xavier and Justin didn't have to do that. They were guys that were ranked in the late 200s, 300s, if the rankings really matter, and they come and they have really good freshmen. Well, now there are expectations.
Right.
And how do you deal with that? How do you navigate that? Now they're outside voices. And so we have to help Justin, to really navigate that in the right way so he can be even better this year.
And you mentioned those two guys and they're two players that will obviously benefit if you have better shooting offensively. And you had referenced this. You have a young man, Ethiel Horton, who transferred from Delaware, who sat out last year. In a day and age where it feels like everybody who transfers schools wants to play immediately, how much did the redshirt year benefit Horton?
Helped him a lot. It helped him a whole lot. Number one, he was a little bit hurt when he got here. And so we had to sit him for a while to get his knee taken care of. But I thought where it really helped him was every day in practice he was going against Xavier Johnson, Trey McGowans, and Audis Toney. And if you know anything about those three kids, they're really competitive and they're going to go hard. And so I thought that really helped Ithiel to elevate his game. I thought he helped them. I thought when Ithiel first got here, on his part, there was some hesitation of if he's good enough. I mean, this is something he and I have talked about, and I think that lasted for about, a couple of weeks. And then I think he realized that I'm definitely good enough. I can compete against these guys. And as the fall went along and as the season went along, I think he gained a lot of confidence. I think that made him want to work even more. To really continue to develop his game. And so we're excited about him. Now we have to, he hasn't played at this level. He hadn't played in a year, but he can really shoot the basketball. I think he's gotten better with his ball handling, with his decision-making. He's gotten stronger. So I definitely think the year off really helped him.
Well, in addition to him, which newcomers do you anticipate making the biggest impact for Pitt next season?
A lot of them can, John, to be honest with you. And I'm not trying to, say that this is just – I'm not trying to be a cliche guy. But I think a lot of them can and have the ability to. Again, I really like our class. We addressed specific needs, and we tried to be somewhat picky, as we, were able to get these guys. We were very fortunate. We worked really hard at it. My assistants did a great job, and then our university did a great job of when we had these kids on campus. John Hughley gives us a guy that we think can score and put pressure on the defense inside. That's not something that we've had since I've been here. He's a guy that looks like those old Big East guys, you know, as far as he's 6'8", 6'8 and a half. He's about 265 pounds. You know, once he seals you down there, he's hard to get around. He's got good hands, and he's a pretty good passer, you know, for a young kid. And so he's a guy that can put pressure there. You know, Noah Collier gives us this athlete that we haven't had. Noah's about 6'9 now, and a really, really big-time athlete. Now, he's got to get stronger, but his ability to do things around the rim, you know, we think he has a chance to help us with putting pressure on the basket, with rolling on ball screens. He can step out and shoot the basketball somewhat from the perimeter, has to become more consistent there. And then defensively, he gives us some versatility. Will Jeffress, you know, is the youngest guy, just turned 17, but, you know, he has a really good feel of how to play, really smart kid, can shoot it, long and athletic, and so we're excited about him. Now, all of those guys have to understand college basketball. They have to get stronger, all of those things. Max, you know, Big Max is a guy that can really help us as far as depth on, you know, in the post, something we haven't had. He's got a great body, good motor, has shown in the little bit that we've had a chance to work with him, you know, that he can protect the basket. Again, the speed of everything he's got to pick up there. Femi gives us versatility, you know, in our backcourt, can play any of the backcourt positions, can defend any of the backcourt positions. You know, he's dealing with an injury right now that he's out, and hopefully we're able to get him back somewhere in the future. But he's a guy that certainly, you know, we're excited about. He's the smallest of the freshmen at 6'5", but he's got a 6'10", 6'10 and a half wingspan, and is a good athlete and really competitive. And then, you know, Nike's a guy that hopefully we're able to get a waiver for, transfer from Miami of Ohio. Was a really good player there, 1,500-point score in his first 3 years, made over 173s. And so that's something, you know, a guy that's experienced in scoring the basketball on the collegiate level. Again, if we're able to get this waiver form, that's a huge plus for us.
Pitt head coach Jeff Capel joined the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. You know, Jeff, we were doing one of these chats a couple of years ago right after you were hired at Pitt, and you shared some interesting perspective from your time at Duke, and you said that, you know, when you were a player at Duke, you never thought that Mike Krzyzewski would eventually become your friend, and that's what happened when you worked for him and you guys, you know, would talk about wine to drink and different things that you would appreciate in life. How has the Jeff Capel, Mike Krzyzewski relationship evolved as you've now become a peer in the ACC as a head coach?
Yeah, you know, the friendship and the bond is still incredibly strong. You know, I think once I graduated and once I got into coaching, obviously Coach has been and always will be a mentor to me. He is someone that I look up to. You know, I've always said this. I've been incredibly fortunate, you know, in my life that I've had amazing men that I look to as sort of heroes. And fortunately for me, I've been able to call them, to put my arms around them, you know, to be in their presence. You know, my father, my high school coach was like that for me, and then Coach K. Unfortunately, Coach is the last one remaining. You know, my high school coach passed, you know, years ago, and my father passed 3 years ago. And so that relationship with Coach has probably become, especially from my end, even stronger. His voice, you know, his advice, all of those things, I probably lean on him a little bit more now because of the void, especially of my father. And so, you know, he's someone, man, that I will always have incredible feelings for because of the impact that he's had in my life and because I know that there's genuine love there on both ends, you know, from me to him and certainly from him to me. And so anytime I can be in his presence now, except when we play, you know, I love it. Anytime we can have conversation, which we do, is something that means the world to me.
Now, you were at Duke as a player. You were at Duke as a coach, and a coach that, you know, obviously helped put together a team that won the national championship in 2015. What was it like when you went back to Cameron Indoor Stadium representing another program?
It was weird, but I was really proud. But it was strange. You know, first and foremost, you know, that's a place that I love. You know, that place, the university itself, had such a profound impact on my life. When I made that decision at 17 years old as a junior in high school, in April of my junior year, to commit to Duke, I didn't realize the impact that the university, you know, would have on me. Just how it shaped how I view a lot of things. I met my wife there. You know, and so, you know, all of that, and then, you know, certainly going back there, working and experiencing it in a different way. But it was my first time ever there as a visitor. You know, even when I was going through the recruiting process, you get used to coming in a certain way. And so being in a different locker room, sitting on a different bench, all of those things, seeing all these familiar faces. You know, when I first walked out and I'm looking up in the crowd, I'm seeing all these familiar faces. When I'm right there by our bench, right to the left of where our bench was, that's where a lot of the Duke donors, you know, to the basketball program, the legacy fund, like, that's where they sit. And these are people that I have really good relationships with. And so it was odd, but I was really proud because I thought our guys fought. You know, we actually had an opportunity to win. It's a one possession game with about 4 minutes to left. About 4 minutes left in the game, and then, you know, that doggone Trey Jones, you know, kind of starts making plays, you know, reminiscent of his brother, who I had the great fortune of coaching. And so I was really proud of our team, but I'm not going to lie, it was kind of weird.
Final thing, Jeff, we know we're living in uncharted territory right now in terms of what we're going through as a society. We know we're going to have a college basketball season. The form that it's played in is yet to be determined. But regardless of all that, what are the things that have to happen for Pitt to be in position in February and March?
Yeah, you know, we have to understand, and not just understand it, like, we have to really be all in and understand, like, how much we need each other. I mean, that's the biggest thing. And then we have to, the two things I mentioned to you earlier, man, we have to be able to defensively rebound the basketball. Again, we've been pretty good our first 2 years on that side of the ball. The numbers will be even better. We've been top five the first 2 years. The numbers will be even better if we can finish it with a defensive rebound. So that's the first, we have to be better there. And then the second thing is that we have to be better offensively. We have to be able to make shots. And I think if we can do those two things, then we'll have a chance. You know, we'll be worthy of being in the conversation for postseason opportunities.
Well, Jeff, appreciate a couple of minutes. Tremendous perspective on a number of different topics. Stay safe, and as always, look forward to staying connected along the way.
Okay, John. Appreciate you having me on.
We'd like to thank Pitt head coach Jeff Capel for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. I want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein on Apple Podcasts. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We have the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also want to remind you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product that's coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also a reminder to find and listen to the College Hoops Today podcast on Stitcher. You can find us there right now. And time now for our social media portion of the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Send me your questions on Twitter. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. And our first question is going to come from Dmitry Petrovich. And John, what is Florida State's ceiling this year? Look, Florida State obviously lost a couple of key players from last year, Devin Vassell and Patrick Williams, as well as Trent Forrest. But Leonard Hamilton has now set the bar where each and every season Florida State should be expected to compete for an ACC regular season title and a high seed in the NCAA tournament. Scotty Barnes has a legitimate chance to be the best freshman that Leonard Hamilton has ever had at Florida State. Our next question comes from B. Jenko, and it's, John, is this the deepest Boston College team of the Jim Christian era? I think when you look at the grad transfers that Jim Christian has added, I think if you look at the returning personnel, I think you're looking at a team that, yes, is the deepest team that Jim Christian's had at Boston College, and a team that is loading up in a lot of ways for a final ride, because for Jim Christian right now, the time is now. If Boston College can get Winston Tabbs back healthy, and from everything Jim Christian has told me, he is going to plan to be on the floor healthy, working out with the team at the start of team workouts in September and October, then I think Boston College has a chance to be a sneaky good team because of the perimeter. Jay Heath got minutes last year. Makai Ashton-Lankford is eligible after transferring from Providence. Damar Lankford is obviously a top 100 caliber freshman. It's a perimeter-driven team, but it's also a team that, yes, is a team that should be better and deeper than it was last season. And our final question will come from Everything Q. Since, John, how big of a leap do you see Quincy Guerrier making? A significant one. I think Quincy Guerrier is not just a breakout player in the ACC, but a breakout player nationally. And now you have a scenario for Syracuse with Alan Griffin being ruled eligible by the NCAA. You have somebody that can step in on the wing and step in for the void left by Elijah Hughes. I look at Syracuse as being an NCAA caliber team next season. And now we're going to obviously dive full throttle into our ACC breakdown. And I want to point out that the ACC preseason power rankings are being brought to you this week by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. Now, the ACC preseason power rankings.
John's ACC power rankings. Power
rankings. All right, we're starting in Charlottesville. Virginia's 1, Duke is 2, Florida State is 3, Carolina 4. I'm going with Miami at 5, bullish on the Hurricanes. Louisville 6, Syracuse 7, Georgia Tech, Clemson, NC State at 8, 9, 10, Notre Dame 11. Pitt is 12, BC is 13, Virginia Tech 14, and Wake Forest at 15. My ACC preseason first team, I've got David Johnson from Louisville, Michael DeVoe from Georgia Tech, Scotty Barnes from Florida State, Sam Hauser at Virginia, and Garrison Brooks from North Carolina. My ACC preseason player of the year is a player who didn't play in the league last season. It's Sam Hauser for Virginia. Why am I making this type of a proclamation? Sam Hauser was a guy who was a 15-7 guy 2 years ago against Marquette. Remember, he was not the focal point with the Golden Eagles. That was Marcus Howard. And Sam Hauser has been an offensive producer, has never made less than 63 threes in a season during his college career, and has never shot less than 40% from three-point range in his career either. Virginia last year won 15 ACC games and was the worst offensive team that Tony Bennett has had since he's been in Charlottesville. Now you have Sam Hauser in tow. Sam Hauser, to me, the ACC preseason player of the year. 15 impact freshmen in no particular order. Jabri Abdur-Rahim from Virginia. The next four or five are from Duke. Jalen Johnson, Mark Williams, Jeremy Roach, DJ Stewart, and Jamin Brakefield. Scotty Barnes from Florida State. Caleb Love, RJ Davis, Dayron Sharp, and Walker Kessler, all from North Carolina. Earl Timberlake from Miami, P.J. Hall at Clemson, Damar Lankford from Boston College, and Joe Bamisile from Virginia Tech. Now we're going to look at the impact transfers. This does not include transfers who have pending waivers with the NCAA. Sam Hauser at Marquette, Patrick Tepe at Duke from Columbia, Sadar Calhoun, the JUCO import at Florida State, Nasir Brooks at Miami by way of Cincinnati, a pair of grad transfers at Louisville, Cardleek Jones and Charles Midland, Nick Honor at Clemson, he came from Fordham, Thomas Allen and NC State, he came from Nebraska. Cormac Ryan at Notre Dame from Stanford. Ithiel Horton, who Jeff Capel mentioned at Pitt, he came from Delaware. Makai Ashton-Lankford at BC. Cartier Jarre at Virginia Tech. Kevin Aluma at Virginia Tech. He was with Mike Young at Wofford. Alan Griffin at Syracuse. And also Kyle Sturtevant from Georgia Tech. 10 breakout players, again, in no particular order. Jay Huff at Virginia, Matthew Hurd at Duke, Anthony Polite at Florida State, Isaiah Wong at Miami, 2 at Louisville, David Johnson and Samuel Williamson, Manny Bates at NC State, Quincy Guerrier Garrier at Syracuse, Nate Leshefsky at Notre Dame, and Isaiah Mucius at Wake Forest. We'd like to thank Pitt head coach Jeff Capel for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. We'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.